A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. 100% engagement.
It's a total disrespect.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Jim White and Simon Jordan.
I don't see that view.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. I'm Sam Matterface, and today myself, Simon and Martin O'Neill discuss Manchester United's sensational extra-time win over Liverpool in the FA Cup quarter-final. The dream farewell quadruple is over for Jurgen Klopp, but will this be a turning point in Manchester United and Erik ten Hag's season? And Chelsea are off to Wembley again, but both manager Mauricio Pochettino and Raheem Sterling were booed by their supporters in the win over Leicester City at the Bridge. How can they both reconcile with the fans? This is Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Welcome to the Coliseum of Confrontation. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
The quadruple quest is crushed. Jurgen Klopp leaves the field beaten in his last ever FA Cup tie. Manchester United, on the brink of elimination, have somehow salvaged it and gone on to win it in the most extraordinary period of extra time.
It was an outstanding weekend. Was it one of those weekends that the FA Cup sort of can deliver that no other tournament really can?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it depends where your position on the Premier League is and how much value you attach to that over above and everything else. But it produced a series of games which are symptomatic of the FA Cup at this stage. You know, we've seen in the past, we've seen teams like Wycombe Wanderers do things in games. And we've seen teams, you know, constantly produce memorable fixtures and memorable outcomes, and nothing was different this weekend. So the FA Cup to me is a very valuable proposition.
Do you think Newcastle fans this morning will be sitting there scratching their heads a little bit, watching Coventry City and Leicester City give it a go against Premier League opposition, and maybe Newcastle not being able to land too many punches on Manchester City on Saturday evening?
When you get to the quarter final and you know it's going to be played, it's not as if there's to say there's going to be a replay and you can get a team back to your ground, then I think you really have to have a go. You must have a go. And if you tell me that Newcastle didn't, then that's really disappointing.
Let's talk about...
They couldn't get the ball. I mean, if you look at the commentary that Danny Murphy was saying during the course of the game about they've got to get closer, they've got to press higher, they've got to work harder than what they're doing. And Alan Shearer at half-time is going, yeah, in principle, that's what we've got to do, mm-hmm. but we can't get the ball off Man City. We can't do this. We can't create any pressure.
Pearce's problems with it was, and he was on TalkSport on Saturday night, he was saying that when Newcastle are at their best, they're much more aggressive. They're much more intense. They do get closer to opponents.
And
they
weren't able to do that. Stuart, he said that Newcastle are going to win the league this year.
He did.
So, you know, you have to take both each of them, one of those.
Did he?
Yeah, he did, yeah.
He did. Right. Okay.
But I think you have to look at the omnipotence of the performance of Manchester City rather than perhaps the passive aggressive or the missing aggression Newcastle weren't able to manifest in themselves. They're not the same side that they were at the beginning of the season. They're not playing with the same momentum, the same belief. They're not playing with the same forthrightness, and that might be a combination of the toll of the season or just the levelling out of where they are at this moment in time.
No doubt the game of the weekend and the talking points of the weekend came from Manchester United's victory over Liverpool in stoppage time at the end of extra time. Do you think this could be a turning point for Erik ten Hag, who was clearly under pressure? Lots of people suggesting that he needed a big result and a big showing against Liverpool in order to sort of impress his new masters.
Well, if he did need it, he got it. It was a fantastic effort. Really, really fantastic. You're in the quarter final, you're up against, you know, what you would consider you've been your biggest opponents for quite some considerable years, really. The animosity between Liverpool and Manchester United goes very deep, and just, you know, to fight back in the manner in which they did, having players all over the place. It was, Simon mentioned, a memorable cup tie. It was really, really great. But to win it in the manner in which they did, and to have the crowd absolutely razz for this game, and to see those scenes at the end, yeah, well, if indeed that was needed, then he got it.
The sight of Bruno Fernandes limping playing centre-back, Anthony playing left-back, probably when you first glanced at it, a little bit disconcerting going into extra time. Only two defenders on the pitch. But how much credit does Erik ten Hag deserve for throwing caution to the wind and just going for it, gambling with everything?
You have to. Yeah, exactly. You're only going to get the one chance. And it doesn't really matter where... You talk about tactics. The tactics disappeared long time into that game, so it didn't really matter. It was cut and thrust. It was whoever was losing the ball. The next team were coming in counter-attacking. Then that was broken up, coming back again. So really, it didn't really matter who was playing in what position at the end of it. It was a matter of trying to get the result, and they got it.
Was it bold? Was it brave? Or was it desperate?
Probably a combination of all of the above. I mean, ultimately, you know, I watched the game in its entirety. I watched Liverpool take control of the game and thought that they would decimate United because United were so easy to play. I thought United were brilliant for the first 25 minutes. And if they can play like that for significant proportions of games, then they'll win more than they lose. To characterise your question, do I think it's a salvation of Ten Hag in that moment? If you're micromanaging situations, yeah, maybe. If you're going to macromanage it, yes, they'll beat Coventry in the cup semi-final with due respect. And the moment they beat Liverpool, I sat there going, I bet they draw Coventry. But they'll get ripped to pieces by Man City if they play Man City in the cup final, because Man City are a far better side. I was surprised at Liverpool. You have to give credit to United because they had the fortitude to get themselves back into the game. But there were passages of time in that game where I thought Liverpool let United off the hook a little bit.
Failed to kill them off. They're usually killers in those circumstances, aren't they?
And they make two errors. You know, United creating pressure on them, but not, you know, both of the two goals that got United back into it and winning the game were created by Liverpool errors. You know, Darwin Nunes and Harvey Elliott. And you look at that game, and I don't want to take anything away from Ten Hag and United, because what you saw was application. Yeah. What you saw was playing for Man United in a way that you'd expect Man United players to play for their side.
Yeah, but that's all part of the game, Sam. You know, people, moves breaking down suddenly, and you can trace things back, you know, to what happened maybe about 30 seconds earlier. But that's all part of it. That has always been the game. They're dead right. Nunes has played a ball that he probably shouldn't have done. Yes, it is. Yeah,
shocker,
but it happens. It happens in the game. And in those moments, I think even Klopp mentioned it. Well, when you're towards the end, when your thinking's not clear at the end of it, it can drive a manager crazy, obviously, and it can affect the game big time. It obviously affects the results. But eventually, you know, you can boil it down. It's the number of chances that you create and the number of chances you score from those creations. And it's obviously defending at the other end, if you can defend. It's just a brilliant, brilliant game. And you know, just on a wider point, really, bringing back what Simon mentioned about the FA Cup, which has lost its lustre over the years. And it is really terrible because, strangely enough, I don't want to go back to talking about my day, but when I grew up, winning the FA Cup and being wanting to participate, probably because it was the only live game on TV as I was growing up, but it was everything. You'd rather have won the FA Cup than win the league. You know, I think everybody from way back from Stanley Matthews days in 1953 right through to winning would have remembered who won the FA Cup. Mm. Might not remember who won the league that particular year, but it was really fantastic. And then, you know, Wembley then taking place, having semi-finals being played there, when an active fight... Why it was probably for finance or something like this year. You wanted
but that's
to
been
play.
Going, but that's been going, in fairness, that's been going for 30-odd years now. Gascoigne scores a goal against Arsenal in a cup semi-final.
Absolutely, but I'm saying so, and it has lost it from that length of time. And now that the replay's been done away with as well, too. So
but it's, I mean, the more people keep saying it's lost its luster, the more it'll eventually lose its luster. People, all the big sides are in the FA Cup. They all want to win it. The
Guardiola has been in six semi-finals in a row.
The broadcasters want to broadcast it. The only thing that makes it slightly diminished is the fact that the Premier League is so all-consuming. I think there's still immense value in it, and I think it's certain sections of the media that keep running this story about the FA Cup, keep running the story that it's been diminished. OK, you don't get a lot of money for winning the FA Cup, but it's still a remarkable amount of associated benefit.
It's not even the money, but it's the replays. I remember... And I know that the fixture list is now, it's so crowded that you're having to look at situations. But I'm talking about replays that were taking place where was it Liverpool had about four, I think, against Arsenal 1 year.
Three against Luton 1 year, 87.
Those things, and that's all disappeared. So it's going to be on the day. So you can't get a team, if you're in the quarter final of the FA Cup and you think to yourself that you're away from home, just try and get that side back again because you could maybe be in the semi-final. Listen, okay, my romanticism has disappeared completely.
I just wonder what Manchester United fans think about the weekend. What happens to Erik ten Hag now? He's not really one to open up. He doesn't really get too emotional, but I think he was a little bit annoyed about the characterisation of the team after the Manchester City game, saying that they were too negative. He was pointing to the fact that they've had a lot of injuries. He actually said recently if they'd had all of their players available, his win rate would be over 75%, which raised a few eyebrows. Do you think that he's given a rough ride? Should he stay? Did he show yesterday that he's got the cojones to be able to turn big matches? Because they certainly did yesterday. 03717 2233 44. And how much did the brutal schedule have something to do with Liverpool's performance? It was their 18th game of 2024, Manchester United's 12th. It was also Liverpool's fifth game in 16 days, Martin. How difficult is that to go for?
That is difficult regardless of what squad you have. That is really difficult, I must admit. And every single game that they are playing is a big, big match. There's no such thing as a small game for Liverpool. And they were going for everything, obviously, because the manager's leaving. It's given an added incentive to everybody that's involved with Liverpool. So that'll be a massive disappointment for them to lose the game. But it's a really heavy schedule. You just mentioned there, that's their 18th game since the start of January. It's remarkable.
Guys, I've waited all night for this great show. The man with the suit that doesn't fit is at it again. Massive win for Manchester United and Ten Hag's kids from Ryan making fence panels in Altrincham.
What a tragedy that you've reached the point that you win an FA Cup quarterfinal. you're stinking the place out in the league. You're the biggest spenders in world football. And your moment is to beat Man United in an FA Cup quarterfinal.
Liverpool.
Fantastic. His suit fits him much better as a result of that.
I thought his suit looked quite well tailored yesterday, to be fair.
Burberry suit, I think, wasn't it?
Download, stand well back, listen. Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Let's talk about some of the issues that arrived outside of the game yesterday, because the Premier League have been asked to start cutting allocation to combat tragedy chanting in a similar way that Hibs are doing north of the border. An FA spokesman yesterday saying that they were aware of reported tragedy chanting during the FA Cup fixture between Manchester United and Liverpool, and they're going to be liaising with supporters and Greater Manchester Police, who did arrest one person for tragedy chanting yesterday. It's been an issue that the authorities have repeatedly tried to address with tough new measures announced last summer. Have they gone far enough?
Can you cut the allocation of the home team? These are home fans.
These are home fans, but that's not always the case,
but
is
this,
it?
In this instance, the characterisation of the question is cutting allocations a solution? It's not Liverpool fans that were ultimately guilty of this particular situation. It was Man United fan. So what you're doing, you're going to suppress the home fans. What can you do?
You can close certain sections of the ground.
You can have one individual or five individuals in a stadium of 75,000 people, and you can suggest that that's a malaise that is pervading the entirety of football. Tragedy chanting...
I'm with you, but I'm asking... Because I think it's very
difficult... You can do nick them.
Incredibly difficult for you to... I think it's got to be a self-policing situation where the fans have got to almost self-police it themselves, and it starts with parents turning around to kids saying, don't get involved in that chant, this is the reason why, and educating them. Mm-hmm. But on the day itself... I think when you're the FA and you've
these
come out
grown
and you
men,
said...
though. It's got nothing to do with kids. These are grown men.
No, but over time, the way to change it is to change the environment in the stadium, isn't it?
The way to change it is to deal with the culprits, nick them and ban them. That's it.
And you think there's just one person doing it, sir?
Well, if there's 10, if there's 20, if there's 30, there's not hundreds and hundreds of them. It's existed for a very long period of time, and we're now like pitch invasions. We're now deciding that football has a zero tolerance policy towards these things.
No, the authorities are showing, are asking for that, not us. The authorities who came in yesterday, the last season, and said they want proper, tough new measures. But the football fraternity
also has been very vociferous about it. The football fraternity was very happy to have pitch invasions. The media were embracing, oh, look at all those wonderful fans running on the pitch. Now it's not so palatable because players have been attacked or managers have got involved in altercations, and now the football family has stepped up and gone forward. We are talking about something. If we characterise this properly, rather than this ridiculous propensity to highlight things and amplify them against what went before, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to evolve and to improve, but what was in football stadiums before in the last 30 years as to what's in football stadiums now is polar opposite to the reality of the way it's being characterised. There are very small segments of fan bases that behave badly, and if there's an inherent belief
that there is any more than that.
Well, then why then this awful characterisation that there needs to be allocations and it's a terrible, terrible thing that's going on?
It started on this show last week when the Hibs CEO, Ben Kensel, came on, and this is what he said to us.
We are effectively taking quite a hit in terms of financially, but we think it's the right thing, and that's why the statement was impactful and important, because if we're prepared to do that, then we obviously mean that it's gone too far and a line has been crossed, and we want to do something about it and we want to address it. And that dialogue will happen with the SFA, the SPFL. You know, we have a brilliant game up here in Scotland that we're immensely proud of, both nationally and at league level, domestically. And you know, what we want to do is we want to make sure it's the best game it can be observed in the most appropriate way, and what we believe that lines have been crossed, and we want to try to address that in the best way possible. But I would stress, we want to do that in a collaborative way with fans, with other clubs and with governing bodies.
I think the key point here is that the difference in Scotland is that this has been going on for quite some time involving Rangers and Celtic supporters, and therefore he believes that the only way to stop that from happening in his stadium is to reduce the allocation. You've obviously had experience of it. We know how nasty and divisive it can be. Is that the right course of action?
Well, I think I might be wrong on this, but I think that he was talking especially about the flares and the pyros that they were sent in as well.
Yeah, that was another point of his that he was making.
And a player going to take a corner kick and being pelted with stuff. So I think those things are issues rather than sort of tragedy chanting. But yeah, it's been going on a long time. But is it something that they're going to try and ban because someone sings, for instance, from the Celtic viewpoint, sings the Fields of Athenry, or from a Rangers viewpoint, they sing the Sash My Father Wore, things like this here? I'm not sure. It is a brave move of him if he thinks that this is causing deep offence to a lot of people up there and reducing an allocation. That is brave, because Hibs will actually be losing out in terms of money.
Is it the point that the FA are trying to ensure that it doesn't get to the point where we have even more problems, or problems come further down the line from these chants? They want to nip it in the bud. Well, they want to nip it in the bud before it becomes big.
The FA are incompetent. That's the reason why the game's in the state that is. That's the reason why you have to have independent regulators coming into the sport, because the FA have abdicated any responsibility.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be releasing statements like this unless they wanted to do something about it.
Well, they're playing to the gallery. People can release statements all day. We've heard many politicians talk about the need for football fans to be nice to one another. This is deep-seated and seeded in the culture of football, that there's tribalism. And now what we've got is a zero tolerance policy, and that's fine, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we also have to be realistic in what we're doing. Like, the propensity to suggest that football fans and football hooliganism has been an English disease for years.
No one's saying that.
Media have done that for years, the English disease, and now what we're finding out, that it's actually more prevalent in other countries. We've got a section of fan bases that need to be consequenced. So if we genuinely believe that it should be peer group policing, which is ridiculous, because it shouldn't be. It should be the football clubs themselves policing people. And secondly, we believe that we're going to extrapolate it up to, say, 100 people in a stadium are representative of 75,000 people, and that ultimately we should start cutting allocations in FA Cup games, when on one hand we're saying the FA Cup is a wonderful game, next thing we're saying we'll cut allocations in it. It's a very difficult balance to walk, but there is, like most things in certain segments of the media, a desire to highlight things and amplify them bigger than they actually are. The game can police this, and the consequences should be, a fella's got nicked, the biggest deterrent is making sure that people... Gordon Strachan used to say to me, one thing he used to would like to have done to football fans that behave in a certain way was put their names and faces up on top of jumbotrons and say, this person has been banned. And ultimately, and then people can see who they work for, what jobs they've got, and then the reality of the consequences of people behaving in an antisocial fashion are very clear and evident for others to see.
I think what you made was a very good point about the FA Cup, in that the fact that the allocations are so big for the FA Cup that the atmosphere was terrific yesterday at that game at Old Trafford. 9,000 Liverpool fans were there, and I think that makes a huge difference. We'll talk about a mutiny at the bridge in the next few moments.
Download, stand well back, listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan. From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Should you boo one of your own? That's a question that's doing the rounds this morning after Raheem Sterling and his manager Mauricio Pochettino were booed by the Chelsea support during their 4-2 win over Leicester in the FA Cup quarter-final at Stamford Bridge. This was the Chelsea fans on the moment that Mudryk was subbed and a chant towards Pochettino took place.
Mudryk is coming off and the Chelsea fans react with fury. Boos all around us. Chelsea fans stand up, arms outstretched, and I think they feel there's no way Mudryk should be coming off. That is a reaction that tells you a lot about the relationship at the moment between the Chelsea fans and their head coach.
Yeah, Lou, I can see what Pochettino's trying to do. He feels like by taking off Raheem Sterling, he's kind of killing him, but he's got to do what's right for Chelsea Football Club.
Chance of you don't know what you're doing from the Chelsea supporters after that substitution.
That was in the 78th minute live on TalkSport yesterday. Martin, you were at the game and Simon said to you, how many fans was it? And you said, oh, it was sizeable. And it certainly sounded that way.
Yeah, I mean, Sterling, who I think is a very, very good player, he's just having a really tough time at the moment. He's missed a penalty. He's gone through in the second half, missed a really great chance. I mean, but it was his own pace that got him there in the first place. And then he takes this free kick. It looks as if Palmer might be taking the free kick. And then in steps Raheem and puts it in. Well, ideally, I think he put it out of the ground, perhaps, you know, a free kick. Even so. So the crowd erupted at the time and they were booing him during the course of the match. When it was come to make a substitution, then Mudryk comes off and Sterling stays in the field. And of course, then they booing it even stronger again. So it's an interesting one, really, because as a manager myself, I think I heard somebody made the comment there, you do what's best for the team. Well, I'm hoping that Pochettino kept Raheem Sterling on because he thought it was going to be the best for the team. Not that, and I would, if I was going to make a substitution at that stage, I wouldn't really want to be pandering to the crowd. I really wouldn't be. I did it early on in my career. I made a substitution way back in my Leicester City days when there was a lot of pressure on at the time, and I would never do it again. And hopefully, and there are many occasions when you feel as if, oh gosh almighty, that will placate the crowd in some aspect. But really, he made the substitution, Mudryk's come off, and then the crowd just absolutely went mad.
He did say afterwards, I'm not stupid. I know how to manage. You've got to trust me to do what I need to do. And ultimately, look, you know, they were cruising at half-time 2-0 up. They had an XG of 4.4 at that time. But within minutes, they managed to have scored the most comical own goal you've ever seen. And the fans were singing, you don't know what you're doing. I thought a week was a long term in football. It seems 15 minutes can be at Stamford Bridge. Why is it so helter-skelter, do you think, there?
Well, I don't know whether that's a microcosm of the booing is a microcosm of what is happening there. The crowd, I'm not so sure the crowd have ever really taken to Raheem Sterling. And I think that he's had a tough time. I personally speaking, I think he's an excellent player. Is he a better player than Mudryk? I think he's a better player than him. But the game had got to a stage where it's still very, very tight now when perhaps it shouldn't be. They've missed a couple of chances. They should be in complete charge of the game.
They went really passive, didn't they?
We saw this with Chelsea in the extra time against Liverpool, where you felt as if almost that they were dropping back and maybe just waiting for penalties. Now, that's an assumption I've made. Not necessarily.
But it looked like that, and it looked like it yesterday as well.
It looked like that yesterday as well too. And I think the crowd became just really angry about the situation. But again, if you are, as a coach, and I'll get back to the point, if you're going to have to make decisions every single time about what the crowd might want, you're not going to last anyway. So this is the whole point. I mean, Brian Clough, one of the great managers of all time, he used to keep players on the field in those days when you only had one sub and the crowd were chanting. Generally, it was for me to be taken off. he would keep players on the field because he was not going to pander to the crowd.
With your knowledge of the owners, what do you think the assessment will be of two trips to Wembley and a top half finish? Is that satisfactory for them?
I think it's moving in the right direction now. Whether Chelsea are a significant working process and not particularly a great side, I mean, if they win the two games in hand, they're going to go seventh in the league. Mm. They're going to have gone to potentially two cup finals. Now, of course, if you go to two cup finals, you win neither of them. It's still just two cup finals you're present in rather than winning.
But if they were to win one, they'd be in the Europa League group stage.
Therein answers the question of what the potential opportunity for Chelsea is. As bad as they've been at times this season and as inconsistent and as strange on the eye, and both in the decisions that they've made with certain players. I mean, Raheem Sterling, for me, is one of those players that's been built up, as we so often do in this country, to levels that he's never been at, and then judged by those levels. He's a decent player. He's a good player. He doesn't play for Man City for X amount of years without being a good player.
He did that himself, scoring 31 goals in one season for Manchester City, scoring the goals that propelled England in the European Championship.
And that's fine, but that doesn't make him a world-class player. I mean, he scored 91 goals in 225 games in Premier League games for Manchester City. So that means he must have gone bugger all for the rest of the time if he scored 31 in one season. The point is that the Chelsea fans, for whatever reason, and I don't think it's constructive, I don't think it's productive. I think Martin's probably right. The manager's got to make the decisions that he thinks are the right ones to make. And if he believes that keeping Raheem Sterling on the pitch... I mean, this wasn't so long ago that Mudryk couldn't trap a bag of cement. I mean, this player's gone from one status to another just because the fans have got something in their mind.
He's been playing well
recently, but it's only in recent times. He's not been a world beater since he walked through the door.
No,
I mean, people have been questioning him.
But he scored
a
terrific goal against Newcastle on Monday night, and he played well in the game yesterday.
And fantastic. But the manager's made a decision, and then the decision has resulted in an outcome that Chelsea have won the FA Cup quarterfinal, and they're in the semi-finals of the FA Cup now. I don't understand. Chelsea fans have sat here 2 years ago pleading for their football club to be saved because they were going to be ultimately shut down. That doesn't mean they should be eternally grateful. But Pochettino is a decent manager. Do I think he'll win the league for Chelsea? No, I don't. Do I think he'll get them into the top four in short order? Yes. And do I think that he could win an FA Cup? Possibly. But if the Chelsea fans have made their mind up, I don't understand what they've made their mind up on.
That's a question for you. If they've made their mind up, if they already feel like they've lost any that they had for him, is there still a chance for him to rectify that situation? Or, as an owner, do you start thinking to yourself, this is never going to work out?
Win games. It's only never going to work out if the manager doesn't win games. If he wins games, then there'll be a dissenting voice. And of course, if he loses games...
You think they'll turn around? Even if they've lost respect for him, even if they've not had him because he's got a Tottenham history and things haven't gone well in the opening stages of his career, he can turn it around if he starts winning. That's still possible?
Well, that's the ultimate equaliser, isn't it? I don't wish to be and never would inhabit the mind of a Chelsea supporter. And so to understand why they might have some disdain towards Pochettino, I think some of the interviews that he's done after the games have been laissez-faire. I don't think there's been enough energy in some of the pushbacks that he's had. I think he was quite happy to be told that his team was a bunch of bottle jobs by Gary Neville and seemed to think that he had more to do with saying he had respect for Gary rather than being very robust about his opinion.
I think he's just trying to take the temperature down, isn't he? He's just trying to play everyone.
I agree with Simon in that point. I disagree with Simon in terms of Sterling's... I think Sterling's been a brilliant player, a really brilliant player, and he's a dangerous player. He's got no confidence at this minute, and your confidence is very, very low when the crowd are booing and wanting you off the field. That's a very, very difficult situation. It's one that you have to try and pull back. And perhaps maybe there might be a stage where, you know, that Xhaka at Arsenal had the crowd baying for his blood and then suddenly, but it certainly changed again. That can happen. It can actually happen and you can become a hero again. He's a really good player. Where I agree with Simon is that Pochettino, he said before the League Cup final, this won't change. Even if he won the League Cup final, this wouldn't change the opinion of what the Chelsea crowd have of him, whatever that opinion happened to have been before. And that's I totally disagree with that. If you win a competition, it gives you a bit of power, it gives you some sort of leverage to go on and push on, and you've got to at least show the owners, I've won a competition, we're on our way, we're starting off, we're really starting to go over
there. It's important.
And the other part was, that's exactly right, you shouldn't be worrying about what somebody said about, you know, being a bottle job. It's as if Gary Neville's comments should be changing the world. At the end of the day,
But they should be corrected. It's also important to listen to what people said. I didn't say that Raheem Sterling wasn't a good player. I think he's a very good player. What my criticism of is this idea that you build players up to a world-class status and then you start to judge them. But Marcus Rashford suffers from that because people then have an expectation which is unrealistic. Raheem Sterling is a good player, no doubt about it. You don't get to play for Liverpool, you don't get to play for Man City, and you don't get to go to Chelsea if you're not a good player. The difference is between the characterisation of he's not a world-class player. If he was a world-class player, then his statistics would be different. He
wouldn't have calling him a world-class player. The Chelsea fans don't want to say he's a world-class player. They're saying that his performances haven't been up to
scratch. Sterling has been repeatedly being told over the years that, and repeatedly characterised in that respect. And I think it's a terrible trait. You know, people do well for one particular season and all of them automatically are a world-class player. And then they have to suffer that legacy of being judged by that standard. But Raheem Sterling has got to take ownership. He's a big boy. He's got plenty to say for himself at times. He's plenty of character about him. If you've got a difficult period, then the best players find their way through it. And 12 goals in 53 games for Chelsea isn't particularly impressive, is it?
No. Booing, should you ever do it to one of your own? This is from Des, who's in Romford. It's disgusting. I've been going to Stamford Bridge for 50 years, he says. I've seen a lot of rubbish football in that time. Not once have I booed. Too many Johnny-come-lately glory hunters. We'd be better off without them. I'm happy to give Poch the time. A joke yesterday that Mudrick was cheered on yesterday, and yet a few weeks ago fans were slagging him off. Shameful, says Des.
Welcome to the Coliseum of Confrontation. Outspoken with White and Jordan.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Well, Ange Postecoglou actually was also in sharp focus after his interview with Sky's Emma Saunders at the weekend. Jurgen Klopp had a moment where he walked out of a post-match interview with a Norwegian reporter as well. Managers under pressure in the immediate aftermath of big games sometimes get into little scraps. We'll ask Martin what it's like to be in that environment straight after a match in just a second. But this is what happened with Postecoglou and Emma straight after the match on Saturday.
Just with the huge strides forwards beating Aston Villa last weekend, the chance to capitalise on that tonight, put yourself into those top four places, just psychologically?
Yeah, psychologically, I don't really worry about that stuff. It's 10 games to go. There's so much football to be played. If we had a one today, nothing was guaranteed. If we had a loss last week, nothing was guaranteed. It's 10 games to play, so I don't worry about that stuff. I never have. For me, I keep trying to... It's not about just falling into a place on the ladder. You know, we can finish fourth, great, and everyone's happy, brilliant. It's nothing that hasn't been done at this football club before. It's about how we play. That's all I'm interested in. So we were disappointing today, so we've got to learn from that, move forward and tackle the next game.
And this is Ange, Jurgen Klopp, after his defeat yesterday to Manchester United.
Normally, intensity is the name of your game. So how come it became so difficult in extra time?
A bit of a dumb question, I have to say, because when you see us that often, you never saw us, and you can ask, how can they have more resources? We played, I don't know how many games recently, I don't know how many games United exactly played. That sport. Yeah. I'm really disappointed about that question, but you thought, obviously, it's good.
So too many games, or
I don't think that. Ah, come on. You are obviously not in a great shape, and I have no nerves for you.
It was an interesting retort. Sometimes after post-match, things do get a little bit heated. Have you found yourself in a situation where you've become embroiled in a confrontation with a reporter and then regretted it afterwards? Or maybe not even regretted it afterwards?
Not even sure I regretted it. Yeah, I mean, I've walked out of a few interviews and probably a lot less than I should have done during the course of time. You get some inane questions being thrown to you. And the amazing thing about it is that the person who's asking the questions feels that 12 minutes after the game is over, that you should be watching exactly the same things that the people in the punditry room should have been watching, and I've seen it umpteen times. Mm. Sometimes you're coming straight into an interview where all you've spoken to is the players. You haven't really looked at the little clips, things like that there. Then you're going to the interview.
Because you're under time pressure, aren't you? There's a certain window that you have to have the interviews done in.
Absolutely, and you're being pushed out there. And when I was the manager of the Republic of Ireland, I was we were in a playoff to reach Russia. We were in a playoff game to reach Russia, and we had drawn in Denmark. The second leg, we were well beaten in the match at tried to chase the game, but well beaten. Eriksson played brilliantly that night, and Denmark beat us.
Got a hat trick, didn't
he? He scored, The journalist or the reporter come out afterwards and first interview said, is this a sackable offence, you know? So, it's the sort of thing that you get irritated with. But he'd been led up to ask that particular question from a couple of buffoons in the punditry room.
I remember that game. I'd come to see you that game because I was expected to follow you if you'd got to Russia. So I was sitting in the stand and I was underneath watching it.
Is that right, Sam? Yeah. Well, it's a shame, right? Maybe you should have been asking me the questions, but sometimes you do feel is Klopp there referring to the fellow's portly shape? Is he? Do you think he's talking about in that interview?
I didn't think so.
When I first saw it, I thought he was thinking about his thinking.
Yeah, I think he was thinking about that.
Okay, I only heard it very briefly, and I thought to myself, I wonder is he referring to his shape?
He wasn't
of his
doing
body.
A Louis Van Gaal.
But
he,
yeah, no, yeah,
I
absolutely.
He, I think he, I didn't.
But
I
no, but the
but sometimes getting back to managers do lose it, don't they? Sometimes they do think that. I think maybe. I mean, I don't know. You tell me. There seems to be there's a lot of interviews after the game. Mm-hmm. You know, we do the radio interviews on a Saturday night after or a Saturday lunchtime after the game, and we are number six or seven in the pecking order. So they would have gone and done four or five interviews with television. They may even gone and done the press conference, and then they come to us, and you're trying to come up with a different line or a different narrative, but trying to get the same narrative sometimes that everybody else has got.
Yeah.
And they feel like, and do you feel like, you're answering the same question 100 times.
Well, of course you do, yes. And sometimes you feel as if you think to yourself, well, maybe I shall try and answer it in a different way. But I'm not so sure that any of us really have the ability of Wordsworth to be able to change things around just as you walk from one interview to another. But you get back to your point, Sam. That sometimes the questioning, you think to yourself, they're leading to something here, and you can see what it is. You can lead to that there, and you don't really want to go there with it because it's just going to cause mayhem again. And I think that's what's one of the points. And sometimes you trip yourself up as well too. I've done that only about 15,000 times. So in terms of interviews and stuff, I guess here, if you've had a decent result, you can be as magnanimous as you want to be. And when the result has gone really badly and some of the questions you don't want, you think to yourself. And also, it depends who's asking them as well too. If you don't have a great deal of time for the person who's asking, then that doesn't help as well.
Is it important to build relationships with people then?
I'm not so sure about building relationships. You can certainly knock them down very, very quickly as well too. But overall, somebody's facing up to you, asking you a question, and you don't really like the person, you know? I'm telling you, I think to yourself, well, yeah, I'll tell you. I'll give you an answer that you won't be expecting.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm pleased that we don't meet in the tunnel anymore at this moment in time anyway, just in case. I wouldn't want to damage the relationship.
Download Stand Well Back. Listen.
Outspoken with White and Jordan.
From the world's biggest sports radio station, Talk Sport.
Thanks for listening to Outspoken with White and Jordan. Please leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast from. Jim's going to be back tomorrow to bring you the best of the show.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.